Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. Ghost Nobody here, ready to bring you Chapter 35 of Hunter Hunted Hybrid Wars, my third trip into the Clan Mason world. Always, if you can like, share and subscribe to this wherever you can, and leave feedback at sites like fanfiction.net, archiveofourown.org, or even at my own website, ghostnobody.com. All of your thoughts and feelings are always appreciated, and I always love reading what you guys have thought, and what you're thinking, and the directions you want me to go in. And if you do pop over to ghostnobody.com, why don't you check out Stormrider while you're there? My original story told on that one site and that one site only. And you know, if big girly dragon-esque girls, orcs, elves, magical realms, multiple worlds, and undead are your thing, check it out, I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy it. And also while you're there, why don't you check out the Ghostly Link section? Pick yourself up a copy of Mortis from either Smashwords or from Amazon. Help support me and keep me doing what I love. Bringing unlikely alien romance stories to you good people. So, without any further ado, let's get on with the show, shall we? Oh, but first the usual legal disclaimer. I don't own AVP or anything to do with it, this is all fan fiction. I'm just here to keep the Huntresses happy. Let's get on with the show. Chapter 35, Branching Out. The funerals were a very sombre affair. The entire clan turned out as Tick and Jack led the procession, taking the fallen to their final rest in the sacred soil of their homeworld. All of them were under no illusions, but by the time this was over, undoubtedly there would be more to follow them. But rather than dishearten them, it fired up their resolve. As they watched their beloved brothers and sisters being lowered into the ground, they stood at attention, military and civilian alike, the fire that was present in every single heart there. Every eye mirrored the same steely gaze. In the grand scheme of things, it was only a tiny loss. But to Clan Mason, there was no such thing as tiny losses. To Clan Mason, every drop of clan blood spilt would be answered in kind. It was a sacred promise that was made when you joined the clan. You stood for your brothers and your sisters as they stood for you. And if they should fall, you answered that sacrifice with blood. Even the Serpentinus and Raptorians were present at the funerals. Liam was stood proudly in his full dress uniform with his pack at his sides, all dressed in traditional Serpentinus funeral attire that had Clan Mason tailors had made for them on special order to represent their people in showing respect for the people who had fought for them and their sister species. The attire consisted of long black hooded cloaks decorated in the symbols of the Great Tree embroidered and hand-hemmed in bright gold and green on them. Underneath, they simply wore black attire. All of the circus surface stalker prides come to Clan Mason's homeworld wore full dress uniforms. If they had a pride male from the clan, they were stood with him as he stood in his own dress uniform, and they joined him in his honour salute as the procession passed them by. Smoke and his pride had been invited by Jack and Tick to be part of the procession, so they marched proudly alongside Smoke as they made their way through the packed streets of the capital. This was not a show of strength, this was a show of unity, of the clan and its allies standing shoulder to shoulder in their grief. At the same time, clan representatives were doing the exact same thing on Raptoria, standing proudly and saluting the Raptorian fallen, and in some cases helping to carry them to their final rest. There were even members of the clan that stood holding and comforting their fellow pride males who had lost their entire beloved prides and were now lost and alone. It was a pain that they shared, having come to this world to fight for it and its people. They had fallen in love with their people and had them snatched for them before they even had a chance to let it bloom. It had been the same story on the Serpentinus homeworld as well, though only two clan Mason members stood in silent vigil and respect for the fallen packs who had stood their home and paid the ultimate price for it. And they had watched the royal pack lead the funeral slither and joined it as they walked the dead to their final rest, sending them home to the great tree to slither free in the golden garden of eternity. After it was done, Jack called a great meeting of the heads of the Guardian Corps, as well as the Hive Kings and Queens. He also called up the other heads of state in the form of the Serpentinus Royal Pack and the Raptorian Command Prides. This was made possible thanks to the breakthrough that Citrus and Yoshi's Hive had made during their time on Raptoria. something they called quantum phase web technology. The math behind it made Jack's skull ache, let alone his brain, but essentially worked by creating particles with the same exact quantum signature. These particles, no matter how far you moved them apart, remained joined and acted like they were part of a much larger whole. So if you mounted these particles inside a communication array and then created a computer program to interpret the movements like a code, you could communicate over insanely long distances instantly. Think of it kind of like Morse code. If you assign a certain letter to the alphabet to a series of dots and dashes, then you can communicate with whoever else knows the code. In essence, that's what these satellites did. They could receive a message and translate it into a series of actions, and the particles would perform them. And this would allow anyone with another satellite to receive the message instantly, no matter how far apart they were. Plus, on top of that, once they'd cracked this insanely clever, Xenos had literally written a programming language system that could not only understand all the Clan Mason languages, like English, Xeno and Yajuta, but now also the Serpentinus and Raptorian languages as well. The result, all three worlds could now communicate in real time with both with each other and together, plus all at the same time, or separately. As the satellites and master controlling computer didn't contain just one of these particles, but billions upon billions of different groups of them, all with different frequencies. This allowed data to be exchanged at an insane rate without interrupting any of the other data flows. Satellites and control computers have been delivered to both Serpentinus and Raptorian homeworlds, plus additional computers have been sent to the Clan Mason embassies on both, while others had been built and delivered to the new Serpentinus embassy on the Clan Mason homeworld, and were waiting to be built into the Raptorian one. The end result was as Jack stood at the head of a very large table with all the heads of the various sections of the Guardian Corps present. They were now real-time holograms of both the Serpentinus, Royal Pack and Raptorian Command Pride seated there along with them. "My friends, it's good to see you all. I wish it could be under better circumstances," Jack said. "The Scalathor and Draconis have been just driven from our respective homeworlds and the losses were minimum. We don't see how they could get better given what had happened, really," Queen Ciri said, and Jack nodded. "Agreed to a point, and that is why I kind of called you all here together today. It's clear to me now that the darkness is spreading and accelerating its agenda. Now it's most likely to our intervention. It was obvious that the Dark Seed, which I believed to be an agent of a much bigger darkness, was not expecting to meet such fierce resistance to its attempt to overthrow both of your worlds, and to strip them of the protection of the Great Tree. If it had succeeded, then both worlds would now be seated in darkness, and its armies would be swelling with soldiers," Jack said, and he could see a worried look being shared among the Serpentine's Royal Pack and Raptorian Command Prides. "What are you saying, Grand Patriarch?" the Raptorian Command Pride asked. "I'm saying that they did not either know or anticipate Clan Mason or our capabilities. But now they know about us, and that put this world at risk too. Our losses were minor in comparison to yours, but there were losses all the same. We bled for the same reasons, and we need to make those reasons official," Jack said. "I'm not sure I'm understanding what you're proposing, Grand Patriarch," Ciri said, her little holographic tongue flickering like she was trying to smell him through it. "My beloved husband is proposing an alliance. Clan Mason, Raptorian, Serpentinus, together as one. The children of Pyre the Eternal Huntress and the true children of the Great Tree stood together, ready to fight evil that threatens us all and our ways of life. A great war is coming, make no mistake on that. This was just the first minor skirmish. And yes, I meant those words as were said. What will come will make what we just fought look like a border dispute. So we need to act. We need to stand together and fight for not only our ways of life, but our right to exist as we are. Because if we don't, well, I'm pretty sure you can guess the results of what would happen had we not intervened on behalf of yourselves," Tick said, standing proudly beside her husband, folding her mighty arms over her large chest as she spoke. Jack nodded in agreement with his wife's assessment. "Indeed, it is as my beloved one said. We need to come together in order to fight this evil. Now, I know what happens outside of either Raptoria or Serpentine's borders is not really your problems, But if this darkness is allowed to spread, then it will be, and it'll become everyone's problem. And there will be no hiding it from it either. When it comes for you again, we won't be there to help. Clan Mason can't fight this thing alone. We need your help, Jack said solemnly. What exactly is this darkness that which you speak about? Queen Ciri asked. It's easier to show you than trying to explain it to you. Is one of my seekers there with both of you? Jack said, glancing between the Taurian command pride and the royal pack, and both nodded in unison. Good. Seekers, it's time. Show them the depth of the darkness, Jack said, and instantly both holograms went rigid as the seeker appeared in the middle of them and pulled in their minds to show them the story that every seeker had seen when they joined. A story that Jack made sure they all saw, so that he knew exactly what they were fighting against. They saw his defeat of Loki and what the Eternal Council of the Divine had shown him. When they finished, both seekers vanished from the holograms, and both the Royal Pack and Raptorian Command Pride stood in awe. How do we fight such a thing? Queen Ciri exclaimed, a picture of horror painted on her regal features. The final part is up to Clan Mason. That's why the clan exists in the first place. Only Dream Warriors can truly fight that. But where we need your help is manpower, technology, soldiers, ships, supplies. In short, we need an army, and we need help in growing it. We need to find allies that will stand with us, help us remove the darkness from any and all worlds we find it dug into. Like pulling out scale ticks, one at a bloody time. We find a stronghold, we destroy it. We find an enslaved planet, we liberate it and free its people. We free to find a fleet, we meet them head on. We need to stand together, because otherwise, everything everywhere will simply fall apart and die. It's just that simple, Jack said. There was a few tense minutes of silence, but then it was broken by the Raptorian command pride. You came to Raptoria to aid us. You never asked for anything in return until now. You stood shoulder to shoulder and bled with our surface stalkers, driving those vile invaders from our beloved world. You aided in protecting our beloved males and keeping them safe in their homes in the arms of their prides, and not being snatched away and enslaved by vile mistresses. For this, you earned the respect and love of the Raptorian people. Your names are still sung in the streets of our cities. How shameful it would be if we did not answer your call now that it comes. So yes, Grand Patriarch Jack Mason, the people of Raptoria will stand with you, no matter what comes, he said proudly. Queen Ciri nodded in agreement. Indeed, I agree with my sisters in arms. You came to our world simply because the Green Tree asked it of you. You stood for us and protected us. You saved my life and the lives of my pack. Not only that, but you kept our ghost slitherers out of their hands of those who would enslave them. And now not only do they have a place in this universe, but are becoming what they were always destined to be, guardians of the Serpentinus. All thanks to Clan Mason. So it would be a truly awful thing for us to refuse your request, Jack Mason, especially in the spirit of which it was made. You come to us humble and demand nothing, but you stand proud and ask humble. This is the mark of a truly remarkable male. So yes, Jack Mason, the Serpentinus stand with you, and we also do so proudly. You will have your alliance. Together we three will draw a line in the sand, and we will punish any foolish enough to slither over it, she said with fire in her voice. Thank you, honoured sisters. It warms my heart to hear these words. And it was great proud that I declare the Mason, Serpentinus and Raptorian Alliance official. Together we will stand stronger and we will become, he said. After that was done, the Serpentinus and Raptorians left to take care of business back on their own. Jack turned his attention to the heads of the Guardian Corps and various hives gathered. It's time to start expanding the clan. Up until this point, we remained hidden from the universe, nothing more than a myth spoken and whispered in quiet corners of human society or Yajuta clan ships. Now it's just time to step out of the shadows and take our rightful place. We call this organization the Guardian Corps for good reason, because we are the guardians of this universe and all who reside in it. So it's time for us to make ourselves known. But in order to do that, we're going to need to expand, Jack said. I would recommend securing abundant resources as not to tax the fragile ecology of our homeworld too badly, Grand Patriarch, Citrus said, tilting her huge head to look down at him at the same level, and Jack nodded. Agreed. That's why, as of this morning, both the Grand Matriarch and I have agreed it's time to enact the colony plans that you set up all those years ago. There are two other worlds in this system alone. They're completely untouched. I want them claimed and colonized immediately. It's time to break out those pop-up colony ships we had you design all those years ago, Jack said, addressing Citrus and Yoshi, who both nodded in agreement. Yoshi was already scratching his chin as his mind whirled over the details. Jack turned to Ind and Murphy. I want farm hives up on both of them the second those colony ships hit the dirt. Feel free to drop as many hugger eggs as you can lay in order to make this happen. I'll authorise a full Battle Angel battalion to be at your disposal to clean any extractions of any young Xenos produced. If you wish, a team of ecologist hunters will also drop in to ensure there's no damage to the local fauna populations as well, Jack said, and I nodded. It's been a long time since I laid eggs like that, Ian said, and Murphy smiled up at her and stroked his queen's head crest. You sure you remember how, big girl? He asked, and she gave him a large grin. Better than you remember how to ride a bike, since three of our children had to carry you back from the fields a few weeks ago, she shot back, and Murphy laughed. Jack looked over the table. We'll also be launching a deep space mission, using data taken willingly from both Raptorians and Serpentinus, plus not so willingly from the Scalathorn Draconis. These missions will be tasked with locating and assessing populated worlds. These will be convert operations down to gather operational data on any and all sentient species we encounter. If their allegiance is to the darkness, we'll figure out a way to pry them from its grasp. If not, we'll assess how first to make first contact and to convince them of our intentions. We'll also be launching deep space patrols, whose job will be to chart nearby sectors of space for possible resources, plus to keep any potential hostiles away from our own space. All these teams will be small in size to start, in order to enhance their stealth capability, Jack said. What about Mother Earth? Will we be finally making contact with our planet of origin? Liam asked, and Jack looked at him. In time, a team will be dispatched to assess the situation on Earth. It would be a great ally to have, but Earth has always been a hot spot for infighting and political squabbles. The last thing we need is to get bogged down playing peacekeeper because none of the human nations can agree on whose dick's bigger, which, trust me, is their number one pastime. I'm hoping they've grown up somewhat in the last couple of hundred years. But if humans are anything to go by, it's certainly possible. But given the clout of things like megacorporation and greed, whose only loyalty is to their shareholders and bank balances, I don't hold out much hope. Greed was always a major driving force there, Jack said sadly. We'll also be reaching out to the other wandering Yajuta clans. We'll be seeking out and infiltrating various clan ships and planets to see what the situation's like with them. Any clans that can be swayed to break their chains and join us on the path of the freed heart will be welcomed with open arms. Those that scratch and clawed any chance to protect their so-called way of life, like it was, like a fierce predator, will be far from our space, but we'll also show them why it's not wise to poke with Clan Mason so they steer clear, Tick said, and all heads around the table nodded in agreement. Well, people, we'd better get to work. We have a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it in. We'll begin distributing plans to all of you and would expect your sections and hives to be doing in the coming weeks and months. By the time we're all done, Clan Mason will no longer be a myth whispered in quiet back rooms or in digital hiding spots. All the universe will know the name of the Guardian Corps and will also know why it's most unwise to pork with us, Jack said with such fire in his voice that it raised cheers around the table. So, what's first, Grand Patriarch? Liam asked, and Jack shot him a look that could stop a fire dead. There was so much ice in it. First thing, my friend, is me, you, and some of our brothers and sister seekers are going to pay a little visit to the Scalathor. And we're going to show them exactly what happens when you spill Clan Mason blood. And when we're done, you'll only have to mention the name Clan Mason to send their fiercest warriors running for the nearest hole to hide in. They will never forget what we're going to do there. Mark my words. And Liam's expression mirrored his beloved Grand Patriarch's as he nodded his head. On your word, Grand Patriarch, where you lead, the seekers follow, he said. And with that they stood. It was time to get to work. The energy that Jack and Tick's word injected into the clan was astronomical. The section's heads whipped everyone into a frenzy, and pretty soon the entire place was complete chaos. Growing the clan's holdings was going to be a monumental challenge. But both of them had the complete faith in their people. That's why they'd chosen them in the first place. Jack and Tick placed his hands on her broad shoulders. I know what I have to do, my love. The Skalathor will pay for what they have done. There is something for me and my seekers alone must do. Every fibre of my being wants to take you with me, but this is something only a dream warrior can do. And I don't want you or any other member of the clan who is not used to the forces we're going to unleash anywhere near it. Because if this works, the results are going to be harrowing. And if they don't, it doesn't, it'll be devastating. It's not something I consider lightly, but I feel it's the only way to stop them. But also to break the Darkseid's hold on them. Jack said, his voice both serious and mournful. The surprise and concern on Tick's beautiful face were obvious. This was the first time that Jack had ever refused to let her fight at his side. But what was going to do scared even him. Tick looked away from him towards the bright blue of their sky, their home world, and she sighed heavily. Go, my beloved one. Do what you need to. I have total faith in you, and I believe in you. I know that you will always do what is right. I wish that I could be there at your side the moment that justice is served to these vile people. Show them once and for all what happens when you mess with the true children of Pyre, she said, turning at the end and embracing him, pulling him into a deep and passionate kiss as she did. When they finally broke, Jack stroked the back of his beloved wife's mandibles and leaned into her touch. You can count on me, my love. I will etch Valek's name into all of their, and all of our fallen into their very souls. You have my word on that, he said. With that, Jack turned and headed to the Seeker Temple, where he summoned the Soul Knights to him. All right, people, this is it. You join the Seekers of Truth to learn who you are and what you're truly capable of, but how to use it properly in the defence of those we love. Now is that time. The Skalathor have taken our beloved flesh and blood from us. They have sent our brothers and sisters into the Eternal Hunt ahead of their time. So in keeping with the sacred code of the clan that we all live and die by, I am going to the Skalathor homeworld and I am going to extract a vengeance on them so great that no matter how many generations follow this one, they will always remember what happens if you hurt one who belongs to Clan Mason. Today, I will seek to extract that vengeance that I swore to seek for any fallen brother or sister when I founded this clan. So I need 9 volunteers to assist me, as this is far greater than I can handle alone, Jack said. Every single soul knight gathered stepped forward to volunteer, and Jack smiled ruefully. He picked 9, including Liam. Make sure you say goodbye to your beloved ones. There is a chance that this could be a one-way trip, and if that happens, I want you all to step into the hunt with no regrets. Meet me at the landing pad in 1 hour, he said, dismissing his soul knights, and all of them headed off to their homes to be with their beloved ones for possibly the last time. Now, while Jack could have easily taken the Grand Matriarch's Fury and blown a hole into the Skalathor homeworld so deep that it wiped out all life on the planet, that was not what he had in mind. Jack's plan was simple, and it was also tricky. He was going to banish the guilty and the wicked, but spare the innocent. This plan didn't require brute force, it required a seeker's touch. Jack's team took a small Yazoota ship, not much bigger than a heavy shuttle, but with room enough for 10 people to live in easily. It technically only needed a crew of 1 or 2 to run it, as it was a pretty small thing. But it wasn't power Jack was looking for. It was speed and stealth. They had the coordinates of the Scalthor homeworld taken directly from both the Raptorians and the Serpentinus, who were happily sharing data with Clan Mason, so they knew exactly where to go. The Draconis, on the other hand, apparently were a mystery even to them. They apparently once used to live on the Scalthor homeworld, but then had left en masse and gone into hiding. So even though they had a somewhat uneasy alliance with the Scalthor through the Darkseed, no one exactly knew where their homeworld was, and it was a secret they guarded. When they entered the Scalthor space, Jack's mouth fell open. He was truly amazed at what he saw. The space surrounding the planet was completely jam-packed full of ships. They had cruisers and frigates, like the ones they'd fought and destroyed, orbital platforms and space stations, not to mention shipyards, which had appeared to be hard at work constructing even more of them. Scalthor ships kind of reminded Jack of the top part of an old Glock 17 pistol. They were black, boxy and rectangular, with four huge booster cone rockets sitting out the back of the rear in a square that exhausted their conventional engines. At the front were a series of long pointed masts which worked as a deflector system to prevent any strikes from space debris. This was also where their communication array was housed, having both a laser and conventional radio systems. The hull was smooth and somewhat angular. It gave it a sort of sleek appearance, but they were nowhere near as aesthetically pleasing as Clan Mason ships. But they definitely got the job done when needed. There were hundreds of them floating around the planet. Plus, by the looks of it, what they were seeing in the shipyards, they were constructing far larger versions. Battleships, if you had to guess, by their far, far larger gun turrets that seemed to be sat on swivel turrets that reminded Jack of the old World War II Earth battleships. The Scalathor were preparing for an all-out war. That much was obvious. Jack looked at Liam, who was staring at the sight in disbelief. Imagine if they'd sent this to either Raptoria or Serpentinus' homeworld. We wouldn't have stood a chance, he breathed as he looked at the mighty fleet, and Jack's expression hardened. They were arrogant. They underestimated their opponents. By the looks of it, they're looking to gear up to take another crack at them, he said. We need to stop this now, Liam said, and Jack nodded in agreement. Find a high spot close to the capital city, but not too close. For this to work, we'll need sufficient soul energy, but it's going to take time to build up. We can't afford to be detected before we're ready, he said, and Liam nodded in agreement. The planet was dark green in colour. It looked to be one giant swamp. Dark green and brown swirls were the colours of the day here, with a few large patches of blue that indicated giant lakes, but nothing big enough to be considered an ocean or even a sea. Liam was using the comms traffic and various scanners to pinpoint the population hubs, and he located what appeared to be the capital city as he entered orbit, dodging satellites that swirled around the planet. Can you feel it, boss? Liam said, seeming visibly shiver in his armour. Jack nodded. Pain and misery left a powerful psychic imprint wherever it was experienced. This entire planet seemed to be like a giant light bulb made of it floating in space and streaming off in every direction, like a sun sending its heat and light radiating off into space. Slipping between the ships like a silent, invisible phantom was all too easy in the Yajuta heavy shuttle. Its cloaking and silent running stealth systems let it glide silently and easily between them, as Liam expertly piloted them into the atmosphere, where the heat revealed them but also disguised them, as Liam made sure to make them look like a simple meteor. But once they were through, he made sure to re-engage their stealth systems properly and glided them down to the large city. It was an oddly beautiful place. The whole place was raised up on stilts to keep it above the waterline. You could instantly tell which part of the cities were new and which were old simply by looking at the stilts that they were stood on. Old parts stood on broad stilts made of carved and milled wood, while the new parts were stood on huge metal post-like stilts that were sunk deep into the soil. High ground was not exactly in high quantities around here, especially in an incredibly flat marsh-like ground. But Liam managed to find them a small hill to land on that overlooked the large city, about 2 miles outside the main boundaries of the city's east gate. The whole city was locked inside huge stone walls, with four mighty gates set at the points of the compass around it. Once the shuttle was finally on the ground, Jack led his seekers out among the large trees, which stood on long leg-like roots that were splayed out, like the legs of a spider, that all converged into a large thin trunk that sat atop of them. The trunks were twisted and curved through some pretty odd angles, and some of them even seemed to spiral upwards before rising up and spreading out deep green and yellow leaves. As the seeker stood on the hill overlooking the bustling city, busy now in the middle of the day, his unsuspecting people were going about their daily business. Jack could feel, all of the gathered seekers could feel, a tide of pain and misery washing back off the city like a black wave. "Do you feel that, my brothers and sisters?" Jack said solemnly. There was a series of nods, all from the gathered seekers as they stared at the distant city. "It's like feeling pure evil. It's like darkness crawling over my skin," Maset, a huge Jesuita female who was covered in scars received from her many battle scars and hunts, said. She was older than any of the other gathered seekers, and had come from one of the other roaming Jesuita clans after read his beloved wife's words. But she never truly understood who or what she was until she'd set foot on homeworld of Clan Mason. She'd been taken in and shown the truth of who and what she was, and now she stood shoulder to shoulder with her fellow dream warriors, ready to unleash the kind of hell that the Skalathor never even dared to dream of in their wildest nightmares. In truth, their every sin and misdeed was about to come back to haunt them in the worst possible way. Jack looked around the gathered soul knights, and he knew that every single one of them not only understood what they were about to do, but were prepared for it. "Let's do this. It's time to show these people what happens with those who fuck with Clan Mason," he said, and all the soul knights gathered out into a circle around him where they stood ready for Jack to begin. Jack drew his mighty sword, which was still covered in roots and flowers from its blessing from the great tree. The seed it had been given was currently in the soil of the Seeker Temple being tended to by the Tamers, and given to the children of the great tree as a connection to their beloved deity. Now the blade caught the light, and the flowers on the hilt swelled and bloomed brightly. "My name is Jack Mason. I stand here before you naught but a man. I am a man with ability, and I will aid you to get vengeance for all the pain that you have suffered, all the ill that has been inflicted upon you. I offer you now the help and the chance to help us. Seek the vengeance that is yours to claim. Show those who hurt you, defiled you, murdered you in cold blood what the true meaning of righteous fury truly is," Jack said aloud in a voice so loud that it seemed to resonate through the very wood and soil around them. Around him, his soul knights were repeating his words, but now where Jack stabbed his blade into the soil of the ground beneath his feet, all of them pointed their blades at him, each of them beginning to glow purple and gold as the power surged through them. "I call to you all now, children of the great tree. Come forth from your golden garden. Help us. Wipe this place of your birth and death clean of the darkness, the evil that plagues it. Use us. Use our powers to once again enter this place. Seek your vengeance," Jack bellowed. Purple, white, and golden flames sprung up all around each and every one of the seekers. The flames spread out in lines from each one, connecting them all together in a circle. And then, like a web, finally a stream of energy shot forth from the tips of each blade pointed at Jack, striking at him where it pointed. Jack himself was engulfed at the centre of the flames. Jack's sword instantly took root into the soil before their eyes. It became a huge golden tree that towered above all those around it, with huge golden leaves tipping every branch. Jack was lifted into the air, he floated above it, still connected to the web by the beams of power striking from the other seekers. Golden wisps of power began to drift up to Jack from the leaves, and they began to swirl around him. "Join us, innocent ones. Avenge the sins against you. In the name of the great tree and the eternal huntress, I call to you. Help us now," Jack whispered to the sky, and the reaction was instantaneous. it was the most powerful soul summoning that had ever been attempted. The combined power of 9 Dream Warriors and the most powerful Dream Warrior to ever live created a bridge between the living world and the spirit realm. The energy streams from the other Soul Knights became raging lances of powerful energy that further engulfed Jack as he struggled to quell the raging torrents of shifting energies within him. It was like trying to hold on to the power of lightning within your own body. That's when Jack hit critical mass. With a tremendous roar, he channeled all that power, spewing from both his fellow Dream Warriors and the Great Tree itself, and he tore open the fabric of reality itself. Right above the city, a huge golden circle split the sky in two like a giant upside-down whirlpool made of golden smoke, and out of it poured souls by the billions. It was like watching a waterfall made of pure energy and righteous fury as it rained down on the city below. Jack and his seekers could hear the screams of fear and pain bubbling up out of the city like a symphony as the angry souls of the fallen sought out those who had wronged them and extracted their vengeance. But it wasn't just this city that was hit. Like a giant wave of golden fury, the souls spilled outwards, washing over the entire surface of the planet. It was like watching a mushroom cloud, but in reverse. As the wave washed over the ring of seekers, Jack could see them. Billions upon billions of angry souls made up of vastly male Scalathor, all dressed in that golden green armour of the Great Tree. As many of them passed by him, they were giving him a silent nod or a salute of being the one to free them to do what needed to be done. The only solace that Jack took from this, and his seekers as well, is that they knew only one thing to be true there. The truly innocent would not be harmed. Because an innocent soul carries no stains. These fallen souls only came for vengeance for themselves and for those that they loved. They did not come to kill those who had done no wrong. Both the seekers and the army of souls instinctively knew that if a single innocent was harmed, the ones who did it would find the gates of the Golden Garden closed to them forever. This was not about destroying a species. This was about correcting a tremendous sin, one that had been a great many years in the perpetrating, and finally was now under the weight of the righteous fury of the dead. It was cleansed. Just as quickly as it had begun, it was over. The wave went full circle around the entire planet and wiped it clean. But not only that, the great lances of golden fire shot forth from the wave, striking out into space, crippling the Scalathor fleet and stations. In a matter of seconds, over 65% of the adult female population of the Scalathor was simply wiped out. To some, it might have been considered a genocide. But to 100% of the male Scalathor population, it was pure justice. Every one of the souls of the dead poured back through the tear in the sky. And once the last one passed through, Jack released his grip. It is done. You have kept your promise to me, Jack Mason. I feel the darkness lifting from this place, and I feel the light cutting through the shadows. And now, like the seedlings that survive a great forest fire, new growth can begin to bloom. Thank you. A whispering voice that seemed to emanate from the giant tree that had grown up from his sword said, You're welcome. I hope that your people learn from this, because it is a message that I will not soon forget. Jack said softly. I will make sure of it. Now go. Go home and ready your people for what comes. This is not the end, merely the beginning. The great tree said. And with that, the tree shrank again until it became a sword once more, and Jack landed on his feet amongst his brothers and sisters all looking at him. He felt that justice was done, but he could also feel a great sadness coming from them all. They were all sad that it had come down to this. But what was done could not be undone. Let's pack it up, people. We're done here, Jack said, and with that his seekers marched single file back into their ship and flew back up into the sky, flying over a planet that 30 seconds had become a mass grave filled with ghosts. Ghosts who would never forget what happened here this day. Yeah, that was chapter 35, ladies and gentlemen. It seems like the true power of the Seekers is on display for all to see for once. But will the message be received, or will it be ignored? Going to be only one way to find out the answer to those questions, and probably so many more. You'll have to tune in next time. So until next time, this is Ghost Nobody signing off and saying, I'll see you all next time.